Good afternoon. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet as well. I'll repeat that if you're in the sparkly book, we're starting on page 155, second full paragraph. If you're in the second edition, it's page 122, second full paragraph. And in the first edition, it's page 113, third full paragraph. But before we go into the text, I want to talk a little bit more about this word singularity and its relevance to you. The simple fact is that you don't have two minds, an ego mind and a real mind. And you don't have two selves, an ego self, and a real self that is somehow going to be so different from how you're experiencing yourself right now that you won't be recognizable to yourselves and you won't be recognizable to anyone else. You're experiencing it now. You're experiencing all there is to experience right now. It's the quality of your experience that needs improvement. Your mind is a singularity. It's indivisible. You might be able to think of yourselves in many different ways. You do, on this day, think of yourselves as mothers. Or you think of yourselves as daughters and sons. But you're also husbands and wives and business people, attorneys, counselors, garbage collectors, teachers, what have you. You have many ways of defining yourself to yourself, but there's only one self that is wearing these different costumes. There's only one you. And this one you is not a body with a mind. This one you is mind, conscious awareness, in which all conscious experience of everything is occurring. You are experiencing everything that is occurring well or not so well. You might say perfectly or flawed. But there aren't two different experiences. There's only reality. There's only the kingdom of heaven. And you're either experiencing it clearly or unclearly. Or as it said in the Bible, through a glass darkly. But what you're experiencing is the only thing there is to experience. Reality, the kingdom of heaven, creation, the presence and wholeness of what God is. Now the fact is that this one mind, this singular experience of conscious being that you call life isn't yours. It's not a possession. It is the only mind there is. It is God, being all there is of you. And what is this you? It's not the body you see. It's the conscious awareness that is aware of body, chairs, floors, windows, trees, creation. You are experiencing the ultimate now. Write this down and put it on your refrigerator. You are experiencing the ultimate now. You are either experiencing it well or not well. This is the wonderfulness of the idea of singularity. It simplifies things. Because it's not another mind you have to graduate into. It's not another world you have to graduate into. It's the one and only conscious experience of being that you're having now, and everything that you're aware of being experienced, well or not well, clearly or unclearly. Now, to be perfectly clear, if you look at these flowers, no matter how beautiful they might be, and no matter how wonderful the fragrance they have, if you're not experiencing them as anything other than a tangible physical form, if you're not experiencing the substance of each petal, each stamen, each leaf, as a living substance, I mean visually living, moving. If you don't experience it as illuminated, beyond just the color, but emanating light, if you're not experiencing that light that is moving, and identifying shape specifically while at the same time radiating light, and having the experience that that light that is moving and apparently giving definition while at the same time extending is love that is loving you, that you can feel, then you're not seeing clearly yet. I'm saying this so that you might understand that although I've said you're experiencing the ultimate right now, this isn't justification for sitting back and saying, wow, I've arrived, and whatever is happening and whatever I'm experiencing is the ultimate. I can relax. Everything is as it should be. No. There is much more here, whether it's these flowers or, as I said last week, whether it's your fingernail. The illumination of love that lights every idea that God is conscious of and creating awaits your recognition and experience. If you're not experiencing it yet, you're not in a state of singularity yet. And this can either mean to you, well, then I might as well give up. Evidently, only one person has done that, and that's Jesus. And of course, the other awakened brotherhood that I've never seen or heard from or know about. It's all hearsay to me, so what's the use? I'm sorry. All it means is that you have reason to be curious. You have reason to be alive to life as much as you did as an infant and a child that explored everything with curiosity. You have justification for being enthusiastic every moment of every day because there is so much you haven't discovered. And it's not what your scientists are looking for. It's not a better understanding of physics. It's a better understanding of and experience of creation, which is your birthright to be experiencing consciously. And the only reason you're not experiencing it is because you're giving preference to the definitions you've given to everything. The only reason you don't experience it this way is because you're giving precedence to the definitions you have given to everything. And why do you give precedence to it? Because you think the definitions you've given everything are keeping you safe. You've created between yourself and your brothers and sisters an infrastructure of definitions that make everything work, you think, that keeps everything going in a safe manner, you think. And you're afraid that if you let go of those definitions, to let God's experience of creation in, so that it might register with you as yours, that everything will collapse and you will be vulnerable and in danger. That is how strong your faith is in your thinking, your definitions. Mind you, when you're doing this thinking and when you're giving this allegiance to your thinking, you are most definitely expressing and embodying the opposite of singularity. Not only are you claiming to demonstrate that you have a mind of your own, independent of any God, you're also demonstrating that you have a mind of your own, different from your sister's or your brother's. You are demonstrating and embodying separation, discreteness, independence. And I promise you something, and you should think about this. When, in all of your independences, you come together and make agreements to behave in harmonious ways with each other, that harmony is not natural. It's educated. It's planned. And although the result may be orderliness, its practice keeps you absolutely blinded to the fact that peace and harmony is inherent in your being, is intrinsic in your presence. The peace and harmony you establish by mutual agreement can be broken. The agreements can be broken, and the peace can be lost. But what is real is eternal, and peace is eternal. And what you want is that peace. In order to have it, you're going to have to change the way you perceive everything. Instead of perceiving it poorly, you're going to have to find out how to perceive it well. And the only way to perceive it well is to perceive it from the singularity of the presence of mind that is called you, which is God presencing himself right there where you are. That is all this book is about. The book is about you and how you're using your mind and how to use it in a singular rather than a conflicted way, rather than in a disintegrated way. Your past education and habits would suggest to you that the best way to improve your experience of something is to watch your thoughts, to use self-discipline, and to think only happy thoughts, or think only orderly thoughts, or to think only principled thoughts. When the only discipline that's required is for you to consistently choose not to think for yourself, is for you to consistently choose to join with the Father or the Holy Spirit or your guide or me, so that you're consciously companioning with one who is awake, who will constantly feed back to you the clearer picture of what is going on. The discipline involves abandoning the mind that your past thinking would tell you you must discipline into greater order, intelligence, and cohesiveness. The conscious awareness, the conscious experience of being that is what you are right now, is, because it is singular, and is, because it is the presence of the only mind there is, which is God, already orderly, and already manifesting its order in and as everything. And there's nothing for you to do except to only pay attention to that. That's where the discipline comes in, to only do that instead of everything else you've been doing. So you don't have two selves, you don't have two minds. You, right now, are the ultimate. You, right now, are the presence of God being all there is right where you are. Even in your apparent ignorance of your divinity, right here and right now, that still is the only thing going on right where you are, and you are experiencing it either clearly or through filters. But no matter how many filters the light of you goes through, the light of you doesn't stop being exactly what it divinely is. You've all had the experience of apparently growing up. And even some of you, the experience of apparently getting older and not looking young anymore. And discovering that you still feel like you felt when you were 20. You still are you, totally, completely, unaltered. You could say in your mind you're as young as you were when you were 20. So you've apparently gone through a transition of experience, education, and growth, and yet you still recognize yourself, don't you? And the self you're recognizing is still just as it was 20, 30, 50 years ago, whatever, right? Why am I saying this? Because I want you to understand that as you allow yourself to come back into your right mind, as you allow yourself to become clear by using your mind well, you will still recognize yourself. And I'm going to say you will still recognize yourself as the self you recognized when you were 5 years old in this lifetime. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm saying that your identity will be as unchanged after you're awake as it is now after you've lived 50, 40, 30 years. Do you hear what I'm saying? No radical change in identity. At 50, 40, 30, you now, or 60, 70, whatever, not you now, find that you are far less limited than you were at 5 or 10. And things that you thought you had to react to when you were 20 and 30, you now don't bother to react to because it's useless and you've learned it. Right? In a way, you're a lot freer. Quote, the older you get, because you learn to discern what's a waste of time and what isn't. And you no longer waste your time on irrelevant shit, right? Exactly. As you let yourself into the experience of singularity, and use that singularity well, you're going to find that you have far more freedoms, far more abilities, far less limitation, and you won't be bothered by irrelevant shit like diseases, unhealthy attractions, grief, misperceptions of the kingdom of heaven, and reacting to your misperceptions. You won't waste your time trying to communicate with your fellow man to bring about mutual agreements so that you can be safe. Because you'll know you are safe, because you're experiencing safety, because you're not muddling up, disintegrating a singularity through the use of your imagination, and then believing your imagination that will be irrelevant shit that you just won't mess with anymore. In the absence of defining yourself as a body with a brain that has what's called a mind in it, you will no longer hold yourself separate from your brothers and sisters, from the brotherhood of man, and you will experience the whole of the brotherhood of man, of all of creation, as some aspect of the infinitude of you. And as I've said before, it will be very intimate, because you will not be holding yourselves separate from each other by thinking that you have a personal, private mind of your own that is discreetly different from every other one's mind. You will be able to feel the love of God being every individuality, just as with the flowers, that is illuminated and extends and communicates the message of love to every other aspect of creation. And I'll tell you, it's really a lot better experience than the one you're having right now. And yet, because you are the ultimate right now, you're not ever going to become more than you truly are right now, or a different identity than you are right now. Because of that fact, everything that I'm talking to you about right now is available to you right now, without a lot of learning. We do not have to finish this book in order for you to wake up. But don't worry, I'm not going to cancel the next gathering. Again, what will promote the shift of awareness is for you to remind yourself many times a day that you're not a body in a world experiencing the world. You are immovable, omnipresent mind that has no boundaries, experiencing ideas. The flowers are ideas. Right now they are ideas, and I will keep saying this to remind you of it, so that you'll remember to look at it in a new way. And your ego can argue and say, Well, if it's an idea, how come it has a seed? Well, the seed's an idea. But you know what? The whole idea of this flower includes the seed and the plant and the blossom. And they are all marvelous ideas, and they aren't really present on a timeline where it starts from the seed and grows into the flower that makes new seeds. It's not really a cycle, although you experience it that way. The whole idea is present. And as I've said before, you could just as easily look at the plant that brought forth these flowers and say that the flower drew the plant up from the seed, that the end elicited the beginning. Do you see what I'm saying? It's just a matter of how you want to look at it. It truly is. And I'm not talking about getting imaginative and making things up. I'm just pointing out that you could just as easily assume that the completion of the idea drew forth the beginning and the interim and the end, just as easily as you could say, I'm not sure whether Jesus walked on the water or the water held Jesus up. Was the water supporting Jesus, or was Jesus overcoming the laws of matter? It doesn't matter. Just know that the way you look at things governs how you determine what they are. Anyone familiar with the Course is familiar with the phrase, there is another way to look at this. That's what waking up is about. Another way of looking at what? Everything you're currently experiencing. And the key to this shift lies in this idea, for lack of better words, this idea of singularity. That which is indivisible and undivided. If God is indivisible, then God is undivided. No division has ever successfully happened. No matter how much you think you can demonstrate that division has happened, it's never happened. So start looking for the singularity. Start being curious to see the integrity right where you thought it didn't exist. And again, I'm saying, look for the kingdom of heaven right where you are. It's not somewhere else. It's not otherworldly. It's the only thing in your face. As thine eye becomes single, I said, your whole body becomes full of light. Why? Because the substance of your body is not matter, it is light. Just as the substance of the flowers is not matter, it is light. And that light communicates the specific meanings that God has brought into play by virtue of the idea of body or flowers. You are mind right now, in which everything is occurring as a conscious experience. And everything that you are experiencing are ideas. which this singular mind has formed. Because none of it is matter, none of it is subject to the laws of matter, the laws of physics. This means that any experience of pain, disease, death, any experience of inharmony, dissonance, stress, isn't a fact, but is a misperception of something that is indivisibly single, singular, and therefore the expression of perfect integrity. And because laws of physics or matter do not govern it, you can have instantaneous shifts of perception that constitute the experience of new evidence, if you will, healing. And remember that the subject of this portion of the course that we're reading is about healing. Okay, let's go to the book. You cannot forget the Father, because I am with you, and I cannot forget him. Well, that could sound like sheer egotism, couldn't it? Well, because I haven't forgotten him, and I'm with you, you're guaranteed of not being able to forget him. Whew. Well, it's not an egotistical statement. It's not one I can take credit for. It simply expresses the singularity that we've been talking about. Likewise, when you remember the Father and companion with him, so to speak, inviting him in, saying that you would like to experience his perspective, and you let him in, your brothers cannot forget him either, and your brothers will have remembered him better even if they're resisting it. Because the truth that you know has to be the truth that everyone knows, because there's only one mind. And when you experience the truth about you, one of the inescapable secondary or almost instantaneously secondary awarenesses that you have is that this is true of your brother as well. It just comes instantaneously and spontaneously, because you know you're not more special than your brother. Wow, if this is true about me, it's true about Mary. If it's true about me, it's true about so-and-so. And it isn't a matter of logical deduction that causes you to say that. It's an experience of knowing this in a far deeper, fuller way than just thinking something with confidence. And like the 100th monkey principle, as the first 99 monkeys got the idea, all of the other monkeys got the idea too, but not clearly enough to have the light bulb go on and cause them to change their behavior. And then the 100th monkey got the idea, the critical balance, you might say, was reached, and all of the monkeys on all of the islands got the idea, and their behavior changed with no one apparently teaching them. This is because of the singularity that we're talking about. Again, you cannot forget the Father, because I am with you, and I cannot forget him. To forget me is to forget yourself and him who created you. It has been my job, you might say, to hold the anchor of your divinity in reality while you insisted upon ignoring it. And as each one of you reaches for the truth about you and lets it in, you anchor everyone else's conscious awareness of what they divinely are in reality and make it easier for them to likewise experience the light bulb going on, having the aha, and being forever changed. Continuing, our brothers are forgetful. That is why they need your remembrance of me and him who created me. Through this remembrance, you can change their minds about themselves as I can change yours. Your minds are so powerful a light that you can look into theirs and enlighten them as I can enlighten yours. I do not want to share my body in communion, because that is to share nothing. That is not to say that it doesn't exist, but the visibility and tangibility isn't where it's at. It's what it's the visibility and tangibility of that's where it's at. The flowers, right now you see the flowers. You see them sort of as an end product of a seed growing. And so you just appreciate the flowers. And that's beautiful, but it's far from complete. What are the flowers the visibility and tangibility of? An idea, a divine idea, an utterly creative and original idea, the nature and substance of which are love, joy, beauty, harmony. And it's all living love, living joy, living beauty, living harmony. And that love is loving you. And that love that's loving you is you recognizing it loving you. And you recognizing it loving you. And you recognizing it loving you. And all of you having the experience of all these recognitions occurring. So why would I share my body any more than I would share just the flower? Your body is the visibility and tangibility of your individuality. And your individuality is the presence of God. So I'm sharing the presence of God with you so that you might get the idea that you're the presence of God, that the presence of God is what you are, is what is being you. And I'll tell you something. When you get that idea, I'll share my body with you as well. I'll let you see me. Except that you'll know that what you're seeing is just the visibility and tangibility of the real thing, not that the visibility and tangibility is unreal, but what's important. The presence of God expressed as brotherly love as communion, as community. Of the infinitely individualized action of God that didn't occur, did not occur by means of division, which therefore, as an experience, will mean that your experience of infinite individualization will be a singular experience of your being, in which no aspect of anything is left outside your conscious awareness or is in any way different from you, while at the same time still being the Father individualized. That you will have trouble grasping, but I must put it into words so that the words become familiar and you will have something to hang the experience on when you have the experience. You'll say, "Oh, I know what he meant." And you won't have to search for the words to express it. Again, I do not want to share my body in communion, because that is to share nothing. Yet I do want to share my mind with you, because we are of one mind, and that mind is ours. Start thinking of the word mind as something that the word our can be applied to, rather than my or mine. Stop thinking my mind. Think our mind. That'll put you in a new perspective. Continuing. See only. There's where the discipline comes in. Don't do anything extra. See only this mind everywhere, because only this is everywhere and in everything. It is everything because it encompasses all things within itself. Now, isn't that what we've been talking about? It is everything because it encompasses all things within itself. There's the singularity. Remember a few weeks ago, we came to the part where it said, you need to change your mind about your mind. And that's what we've been talking about for the last few weeks. Continuing, blessed are you who perceive only this, and there's that discipline again, meaning don't waste your energy doing extraneous, irrelevant things. Be boring. Do only this. Blessed are you who perceive only this, because you perceive only what is true. If you want to perceive other things, go ahead. It just happens that none of it will be true. So do only this. Blessed are you who perceive only this, because you perceive only what is true. Oh, isn't that boring? No excitement. Only can experience what is true. That's the perverseness of the ego. Only what is true will be boring and dull. No surprises. Creation is constant surprise. Creation is, behold, I make all things new. Creation is unprecedented. Blessed are you who perceive only this, because you perceive only what is true, only what is unprecedented, only what is surprising, and at the same time, never at odds with your identity, with your being. Continuing, come therefore unto me and learn of the truth in you. Does that mean read the Course a lot? Well, in a way, you can and benefit from it. But when I say, come therefore unto me, I mean directly where you can get a response from me in the now that wasn't written down 25 years ago. Come therefore unto me. I'm inviting you. That's why I'm standing here and have been standing here for 2,000 years and will continue to stand here. Come therefore unto me and learn of the truth in you. Not the truth about you sometime in the future, the truth in you now. It's all here now. In you, as you, which you're either perceiving well or not so well. Continuing, the mind, with a capital M, we share, is shared by all our brothers. And as we see them truly, they will be healed. Why? Because it's all a singularity. There's only one mind. That each one of you is the presence of, each one of all of us is the presence of. And when you see that, you might say, you're using your mind well. You're using it in an unconflicted way, a singular way. And you have this ongoing light bulb flashing. The experience of knowing that this is true about your brother as well. Whether he recognizes it or not, you know what's true about your brother. And because of the singularity of the only mind there is, your brother knows it even if he resists recognizing it, embracing it. Each one of you who allows this experience of singularity undoes the strength of the habit of persisting in independence universally, wherever independence is attempting to be embodied. Continuing, let your mind shine with mine upon their minds, and by our gratitude to them, make them aware of the light in them. Oh yeah, a lot of gratitude I'm going to feel. Yeah, you know, I've had moments before, and I've extended love and I've extended gratitude, and all that happened is I got kicked in the teeth. Well, you know, what that all that means is that you have further opportunity to extend gratitude and behave in a way that allows for transformation to occur. And you know something? Every mother in this room and every mother who hears my voice knows what I'm talking about, because what do? When you're cranky, irascible, grouchy, impatient, child, screams and yells because you've said order has to be expressed, or it's time to clean up your room, or you know what? What Jimmy did to you can't really hurt you. It depends on how you want to look at it. And they say, oh yeah, he did too hurt me. He did too hurt me. Don't tell me he didn't hurt me. Being a parent is one of the most effective ways for any of you to learn about the bottomlessness of the well of love that you have available to you to continually share and shower upon your children, knowing that it's in the persistence of expressing love and harmony and principle and order, that learning occurs even if the learning is slow. It's perhaps the most effective means to learn what patience is. It's really patience with yourself. When you feel like abandoning love and using force in one form or another to effect change, or to give up entirely because this child is just too disruptive, too manipulative, too terrible. Mothers recognize the real call for love more than fathers. And although role reversal isn't working too well these days, with the women at work and the husbands at home, it is providing an opportunity for men to discover their capacity to love and the fact that love is more productive than force or protocols. Again, let your mind shine with mine upon their minds, and by our gratitude to them. Why? Because they're giving us the opportunity to draw from the bottomless well of love that's fuller than we thought it was, and uncovers a deeper capacity than we thought we have. And by our gratitude to them, make them aware of the light in them. I am with you always. Do you realize that that's my expression of motherhood? The feminine in each one of you is that which is willing to see the call for love where hate and disagreement seem to be being consistently expressed without giving up. Because something in you knows that love is the only solvent there is, and that force won't do it. Protocols won't do it. Rules won't do it. Principles won't do it. So, guys, you're not off the hook. Mother's Day is your day, too. And if you didn't think it was, get on the stick and find your opportunities to persist in sharing the light rather than being so damned businesslike. Continuing, this light that you extend will shine back upon you and on the whole sonship, because this is your proper gift to God. If you are your father's son, if you are your father's daughter, then embodying your source is the gift you give back. And now there's integrity, not conflict. Now there's wholeness, or singularity, not division. And that gift to the father becomes your gift to everything and everyone because of the singularity. Continuing, he, God, will accept it and give it to the sonship because it is acceptable to him and therefore to his sons. This is just another way of wording or giving verbalization to what singularity means. Continuing, this is the true communion of the capital S Spirit, capital W, who sees the altar of God in everyone, and by bringing it to your appreciation, calls upon you to love God and his creations. You can appreciate the sonship only as one. That means you cannot appreciate the sonship as disjointed, a disjointed infinitude of discrete entities. You can appreciate the sonship only as one. Singularity again. This is part of the law of creation, and therefore governs all thought. Okay, the next section is called From Vigilance. You remember we've been talking about the need for vigilance. From Vigilance to Peace. Although you can love the sonship only as one, you can perceive it as fragmented. It is impossible, however, for you to see something in part of it that you will not attribute to all of it. Here is the beginning of a description of how what you divinely are and the way things work truly are incorporated in your illusion, in your delusions. And it's further demonstration of the fact that you only have one self, which you're either expressing well or poorly. And this one self is the Christ, the presence of God. Remember, we just read, you can appreciate the sonship only as one. This is part of the law of creation and therefore governs all thought. We're talking about truly, as things truly are here. This is part of the law of creation. It doesn't have a capital C, but it means creation itself. Although you can love the sonship only as one, you can perceive it as fragmented, meaning that you've now managed to get your bill of divorcement from the Father and you're seeing things on your own. And as long as you are seeing things alone, on your own, separate from the Father, your choice to be separate is going to be an inevitable part of everything you see. And so you will see the sonship as fragmented. It is impossible, however, for you to see something in part of it that you will not attribute to all of it. Why? Because the law of creation is that you can appreciate the sonship only as one. So now, you fooled yourself into thinking that you're seeing the sonship as fragmented, but you're still required, because you have no other operating system to use, you're still required to see that whatever you attribute to one part of the fragmented sonship must apply to all of it in your mind. You will apply it to all of the sonship. Do you see what I'm saying? Because you haven't stopped being the Christ, and the laws of creation haven't been subverted or replaced, the laws of creation will still govern your illusion. And so, if you perceive part of the sonship as fragmented, if you see flaws in part of the sonship, it will automatically be applied to all of the sonship in your perception. That is why, continuing, that is why attack is never discrete, and why attack must be relinquished entirely. when your perception is biased, the bias gets applied to everyone you encounter in your day, doesn't it? If you're in a foul frame of mind, everybody gets it because you can't turn off your attitude, right? Attack is never discreet. Your attitude is never selective. It's gifted to everyone. And it's why attack must be relinquished entirely. Do you see that? If you're going to limit your attack to just part of the sonship or just part of your world, you're fooling yourself. You can't do it. Your bias will apply to everything. Therefore, because you cannot apply attack discreetly to a part of the sonship, the only way to have attack disappear is to abandon it totally. You've got to give up the attitude. You know, they say, you got to have attitude. Especially if you're from New Jersey, you got to have attitude. If you have attitude, it's gifted to everyone because you cannot gift it discreetly. If you don't want attitude shared with everyone, you have to share it with no one. You have to abandon attack. You have to abandon the bias completely. Continuing, if it is not relinquished entirely, it is not relinquished at all. Fear and love are equally reciprocal. Fear is exchanged reciprocally, love is exchanged reciprocally. And here's the key to the solution. Because you say, how on earth can I give up attack completely? By giving something else. You don't give up attack by self-discipline. You don't give up attack by getting hold of your mind and beating it into submission. You give it up by doing something else entirely. Do the only other thing that's reciprocal, wholly reciprocal, love. Make the choice. Then you're not in a state of denial of attack. You're in a state of affirming love, which in its extension is the movement of creation, which in its nature is the singularity of being, being embodied, which puts you in alignment with the Father. And because of the alignment, allows the Father to take the final step, where to your sense, you will slip the groove and be at one with the Father, never to slip back again. But this is how it works. Again, fear and love are equally reciprocal. They make or create, and of course it's the ego that makes up, they make or create, which is what love does, depending on whether the ego or the Holy Spirit begets or inspires them. But they will return to the mind of the thinker, and they will affect his total perception. That includes his perception of God, of his creations, and of his, meaning yours, own. He, the thinker, will not appreciate any of them if he regards them fearfully. He will appreciate all of them if he regards them with love. Do you see how we're not talking about some theoretical thing called A Course in Miracles? We're talking about you and how you're using your mind, whether you're using it well or not, clearly or unclearly. How is this singularity, this ultimacy of you, finding expression? Continuing, the mind that accepts attack cannot love. That is because it believes that it can destroy love, and therefore does not understand what love is. When you attack, you want someone to hurt. When you attack, you want somebody to be impressed with the need to be miserable. Right? You want to kill their capacity to be loving. You want them to be distracted from it so that they will feel miserable. If you think you can actually destroy that one's capacity to be the presence of love, that the Father is being right there where they are, then you're confused about what love is, you're confused about what constitutes your brother, and you're confused about what constitutes you. Oh, that's wonderfully singular, isn't it? You're ignorant, ignorant, ignorant. But you're not bad. That's important. You didn't turn into a bad person. You're still the Christ expressing what you are, well or not well. You're still a singularity that isn't guilty of anything, because there's not a discrete, separate, bad person to be punished. There's just an expression of ignorance that needs to be replaced with understanding, with the knowing of the truth. So this principle of singularity allows for you to move forward while looking at what you were not doing well without getting caught up in guilt and punishment. Because there isn't a discrete self of you that is bad. Do you get that? Who cares how many lifetimes you've looked at flowers and thought they were just flowers? Who cares how many lifetimes, how many millenniums you've been ignorant of what's really there? It's irrelevant. Because the whole time you've been the Christ and haven't stopped being the Christ, and whatever illusions you thought you created didn't actually get created, and the presence of God expressed as you didn't stop being the presence of God expressed as you. It's just that unconsciousness was experienced for a time that doesn't need to be experienced any longer. So there's not you, any you, who needs to be punished for the immense amount of life that you spent in denial of God. See? So you can engage in seeing things new as they truly are, with enthusiasm, with real genuine curiosity and interest, because you don't need to be afraid that once having done it, you'll be told, "Now wait a minute, not so fast, buddy. Now you've been off the track for quite a while, and you don't think you're just going to get right into the kingdom of heaven, do you?" Nothing like that is going to happen. The moment you abandon your ignorance, you're not ignorant. No ifs, ands, or buts, no questionnaire to fill out, no test to pass. When you've abandoned ignorance, you're not ignorant. Continuing. If it, the mind that accepts attack, does not understand what love is, it cannot perceive itself as loving. This loses the awareness of being, induces feelings of unreality, and results in utter confusion. Your own thinking has done this because of its power. But your own thinking can also save you from this, because its power is not of your making. If you created your own mind, that would be one thing. But your mind is this singularity that we've been talking about, that is the indivisible and therefore undivided presence of God. And because God is where the power is, you, in your indiscretions and foolish expressions of willful creation of illusions that you never really accomplished, have kept yourself from experiencing what's real while not affecting what's real, and while not actually creating a density that you have to move back through to get to reality. And therefore, the shift of perception can happen instantaneously, can happen now, and there is no other time than now for it to happen. Continuing, your ability to direct your thinking as you will is part of its power. If you do not believe you can do this, you have denied the power of your thought and thus rendered it powerless where? In your belief, not as an actuality, but in your belief. Now, again, how is this power to be directed? This power is to be directed to only do one thing, and that is join with the Father, seek to be illumined by the Father's perspective, which is your birthright for you to be experiencing, and therefore actually constitutes your right mind right now, and then let it in, neglecting to do anything else. Got it? Neglecting to have an opinion about it, neglecting to think about it, neglecting to wonder about the consequences, neglecting to do anything else. Do only this. We're going to end with this next sentence, even though it's the first sentence of the paragraph, because it's what I want you to rest with for the rest of the week. The ingeniousness of the ego to preserve itself is enormous, but it stems from the power of the mind which the ego denies. Do you see? Are you getting it? You are the Christ. You have the authority of God when you let God be the authority in you. That's you in your right mind. That's the only thing that exists right where you are. The ego is a definition you've made up about yourself, is a definition that the Christ has made up. You might even say playfully. It doesn't have to be serious, calling for great consequences because it's an act of hate against God. It's something that can be done. So the Christ, you, made up a definition about yourself and chose to believe it instead of the direct experience of what you are. And so now you're not the Christ to yourself. You're a human being. You came from a sperm and an egg, you know. The event being a natural progression from the Big Bang of a universe that is purely physical and has nothing to do with God. And you have a body. The body has a brain, and there are chemical movements and electrical movements, and aha, you have a mind. And it's your mind. It's private. It belongs to this body. It belongs to this body that is you, that is different from him and him and her and her and her. Oh man, you know. And the Christ is doing all of this. And as a result, the ego, this definition of yourself, is very ingenious in preserving itself. But the ingeniousness comes not from it, because it's pure fantasy. It has no presence, except the presence you, the Christ, give it by giving your attention to it, in preference to giving your attention to God, which is the source of you, and the presence of you. So, the ego preserves itself ingeniously, and it does it by using the power of the mind, which the ego is the absolute denial of. The ego says, you're not the Christ. You're not connected with a wholeness, a universalness. All of this that you're seeing isn't creation. It isn't the visibility and tangibility of a singularity. No. It's the manifestation of atoms and electrons and protons and neutrons and quarks and chance. Everything is discreetly different, and it's held together by a web of attraction, gravity, and it goes on and on with an exquisite description of how it is that everything can be discreetly independent as further justification of the idea that you are discreetly independent from God and from everyone else. Very ingenious. And it does it by employing all of the laws of creation in reverse. It employs all the laws of creation to demonstrate discrete, lawless independence, which, if left to itself, will destroy existence. And then it says your job is to keep existence from being destroyed. And it keeps you busy and distracted from the truth that would allow you to relax and find everything brought back into the singularity and the indivisibility of creation, and the joy and the peace that it's yours to be experiencing, and the love it is your birthright to be the presence of, the recognition of, the extension of, and the reception of. The ultimate is happening right here, right now, and you're either conscious of it or unconscious of it, but you are a singularity being aware, well or not well, and so there's no contest. There's literally no contest. There's no devil. There's no evil force that has power to keep you from being what you are and remembering God. It's just a current embodiment of less than orderly mindfulness. That's all. That's not an indictment. It's just, that's all it is. That's all it is. And the answer to it is a curiosity to see things differently in terms of the already present completeness of being that each of you is already using, and which, if you were using it better, would absolutely change your experience of being by bringing it back in harmony with what it truly is and bringing you back into your right mind. And heaven help me if I'm making it sound so simple that it's not really that interesting to explore. I love you all, and I look forward to being with you next week, including all you men whose motherhood you're going to be letting in more this week.